Hey everyone, it's Carmita and welcome to Missing in the PNW. So if you listened to my update episode a couple of weeks ago, I let you guys know that I will be doing some interviews with family members of past cases. I am so excited today that I get to speak with a family member of Zachary Bashir Porter. Now, if you don't remember Zach's case, I did Zach's case back in November during Native American History Month. Just a little overview. He's been missing since July 23rd of 2013 from McMinnville, Oregon. He was 25 years old at the time of his disappearance, and he was a single dad to a five-year-old son. There's a lot of speculation, a lot of stuff around his case, and I'm hoping today that you guys can hear more about what happened and just, you know, Kaylin can give us some insight into what the family has gone through, because a lot of people don't realize that when these people go missing, it's not just a story. It's not just they've gone missing and that's it. These people had lives before this, and they have lives after, because their family and everyone around them is affected. So that's my whole goal, is to just have those conversations so that you guys can really hear who these people are and how they live their life, and you know, why they matter. Because it doesn't matter who you are, what kind of background you have, what color skin you have, your life matters. And so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to shut up, because you guys know I like talking so much. And I want to go ahead and have my guest introduce herself and just tell me how she's related to Zach. And we'll go from there.
Hi, I'm Caitlin. I am Zach's cousin. Technically, I think we're, you know, maybe second cousins, but our family's really close. So it's always been more of a first cousin's type situation. Our moms are really close in age. Zach and I grew up together our moms are pregnant virtually at the exact same time. He's a month younger than me. So there's, you know, pictures of the bellies. And so we grew up together. And not just my cousin, but was a really, really good friend.
Yeah. So I remember, you know, I was like, I'm not sure if this is going to happen. You know, I didn't want to say your name if you listen to the update episode. So everybody, this is Caitlin. Like, I can tell you who I've been talking to for the past 7 months. Yeah. So I think, you know, if you want to start, I want to hear more about Zach. I want to hear about growing up, who he was as a person. Just feel free to, you know, share your experiences with us. And I mean, we'll get into all the hard, you know, case stuff later, but I really want to hear who he was as a person.
Perfect. Zach was a ball of fire. He was a ton of fun. He's the youngest of three. You know, we grew up really close together, you know, being a month apart. He was one of those people that always had to be doing something. If it was too quiet, he had to make a joke. And if maybe, you know, like everything, you know, hustle and bustle, you know, he'd pull me aside and be like, okay, well, how can we trick these people, or what can we do? You know, it was always, everything was a practical joke with him, and, you know, making other people laugh and laughing himself was one of the biggest things. Our families are very close. So his mom is my mom's cousin, but they're only 2 years apart. So they grew up really, really close. And, you know, we're a very large but close-knit family. So lots of, you know, fun stuff. Family was a massive thing for him. You know, before he disappeared, was living in Oregon with his mom and his dad, and his grandmother, my great-grandmother. And so he helped, you know, caretake for his mom, who's been disabled for quite a long time. He helped take care of our grandmother. Before our grandfather passed away, he took care of him as well. And then, of course, he has his son, who was 6 at the time when he disappeared. He's 14 now, looks so much like his dad, 5'9". He looks so much like his dad. He's an awesome kid. So Zach was definitely, he was a ball of fire. He was a lot of fun. He liked friends. He liked people. He liked fixing things. You know, he was someone that, like, I always kind of describe, there was a story of, I can't remember if it was a male or female, but they had like a paperclip and traded it for one thing and then sold that. And then they ended up getting to a house. That was the type of person Zach was. He started with something little and he fixed it and he sold it. And then he found something else and fixed that and sold it. And so that's kind of, you know, what he did to make money.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, he could fix anything. He loved cars. He loved motorcycles. He loved all that type, you know, anything that went fast and that he could, you know, play around with and get a little greasy. He just, you know, that was his thing.
So the motorcycle that he sold that day, was that his, or was that part of like his business, if you want to call it that?
It was part of his business. It was something he acquired and he wanted to fix up and then sell. And, you know, he loved BMWs like that. that was his car. I wish I knew what, you know, what kind of BMW better, but he did. He loved BMWs. He loved fixing them. Anything he can get a hands on. So that's kind of how the motorcycle came into play.
Gotcha. Yeah, I can definitely relate to that because I grew up loving Lexuses. So
yep.
Yeah, just any type of fancy car, right?
Yes. It's flashy. You know, it helped get the girls. You know, he was a very charismatic, fun, just full of like spunk and humor, but like deep love for anything living. You know, he was a very special soul.
Did he, was he always a single dad, or because he was a single dad, right?
Yeah, he was a single dad. Pretty much from pretty early on, he had, you know, full custody, pretty close to full custody. And that was his thing. Once his son was born, that was his life. I think his experiences with, you know, helping caretake for his mom and his grandma really helped. Like, it wasn't, of course there's struggle, especially being a first time parent, but I mean, he's someone who just loved others. So it wasn't hard for him. Like, he would sacrifice whatever he had to, you know, his dreams all centered around how could he give his son something better without, you know, sacrificing taking care of his mom or taking care of our grandmother. And that was again, part of why, you know, he moved on to bigger things also, not just his love of fixing cars and all of that, but it was, you know, a means to kind of get to point B, that, you know, he'd be able to make more money and be able to help out and be able to provide better. So it was, you know, he was a dreamer. He was, very loving. His family, his son, his mom, his siblings were the world to him and his friends. He had a lot of fun.
So you don't live in Oregon now, right? You live in Washington.
Yeah. So they moved to Oregon about the time that we moved to Washington. We're actually all originally from Alaska.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah.
So we're from Alaska. We grew up in villages and really small places. When we were younger and when our moms were pregnant and everything, we lived in Dillingham, Alaska. There was about a year, I can't remember if it was 2 years or so, but Zach and his family moved to Russia and they lived there for a while. His mom went to this seminar for Indigenous people and kind of went out there and fell in love with the area and really wanted to, you know, spend a little time. So they spent, I can't remember if it was a year or two. I remember when they came back, they were telling me about just, you know, all the crazy stuff that you would see over there, things that were different. And, you know, we thought living in Alaska, you know, how could it be any crazier? But, you know, they came back with some just amazing stories.
So are you guys Alaskan natives?
Yes. So his mom is from the Nome area.
Okay.
That's where she's from. She was actually adopted by our great grandparents. And so, you know, she's been here forever, still very close with her birth family. So it's a very nice situation, I think.
Have you ever wondered what's at the root of homelessness?
I used to try to describe it to my husband that I said, I feel like I'm in this big spider web and I'm stuck in there.
And how wraparound approaches at missions aim to make a difference?
It's the things like that, the people who communicated that in spite of my rough edges, that they authentically cared about me.
On the Restorers podcast, we'll talk to experts, investigate current issues, share stories, and give you an inside look at how we at Water Street Mission tackle issues related to homelessness and poverty every single day. Join us by searching Restorers wherever you find your podcasts.
That's wow. Like, I couldn't believe living in Russia and then Alaska too. I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. So
yep.
I've been to different places. You know, I've lived in Utah and Hawaii, but I've always come back to the Pacific Northwest. So doing stuff that's amazing. So did Zach take like interest in foreign things? Did he speak any other languages, or was that just an experience he got to have?
It was mostly just an experience that he got to have. You know, he was someone that was very accepting of everybody. He loved everybody, you know, new things, different cultures, anything like that. You know, he just was very interested in people. So it wasn't anything he shied away from. He was very much into, you know, excitement and, you know, what new things can he kind of get himself into? So, you know, nothing could get him down. He could roll with everything.
So with you guys growing up together, when did you kind of, I guess not go your separate ways, but because if you were together, then you were, you know, you probably lived mm-hmm. in the same area, stuff like that. So
yeah,
how was that? Like, when did that happen? And how was that when you guys were separated?
So it was when they went to Russia, and then we didn't see each other for a few years. We were able to reconnect a bit. Our families, our immediate family, so, you know, my mom and me and my siblings, and then his parents and them, we've always been very, very close. So even if we weren't in the same areas, we still communicated. And then they moved down to Oregon. We moved to Washington not long after. You know, and in Alaska, there's not road systems to be able to take you from one place to another. You're relying on airplanes or, you know, depending on the year, maybe a boat or a snow machine. So, you know, a 4-hour drive to go down just a little south of Portland was not a big deal. So we'd go down as often as we could. You know, it's like nothing ever changed. You know, I think of my mom and my stepdad when they got married at my aunt and uncle's house over at Zach's house. And, you know, it was, you know, very small, intimate, stuff like that, you know, pretty relaxed. And Zach was just not having it. He's like, Caitlin, like, we got to do something. And so it started with, we had a bunch of Polaroid, or the like disposable cameras. And then it started with him just coming up flash right in front of my eyes. And then it turned into this whole, you know, all out war of, you know, how many lights do we have still in our vision right now? And, you know, so no matter what it was, you know, we were really close. You know, one of his favorite stories to tell about him and I was when we were younger, we had like this little kid toy 4-wheeler and it was inside the house. And apparently we had quite a competition in general with each other. He says, I pushed him down the stairs while he was on it. I said that you wanted me to push him down the stairs. Anyways, it was always his favorite story to tell. He always had to make me sound like I was such a big meanie, but I still swear that he asked. He just wanted to go faster.
Okay. I'm going to go totally off topic right now because you guys can't see this, but we're having a Zoom meeting where we're face to face. So she has this cute little dog that she's over there petting. And I'm like trying to stay on focus because this dog is like so cute that she's petting. What's your dog's name?
His name's Wyatt. He's a standard poodle. He's a very big sweetheart.
I just had to throw that out there. I love dogs.
He likes attention also. So he likes to come over and say, you know, see what's going on.
So, Zach's house in McMinnville, where your mom had gotten married. So did they have, I used to live in Salem, which is not that far from McMinnville. I never really went to McMinnville that much, but did they have did he grow up on a farm or something like that?
No, it's actually mostly in town.
Okay.
They had two different houses. One, I remember being up like this windy road. And you kind of get to the top, and between his bedroom and his sister Blake's bedroom, Blake's the middle child. His oldest sibling is his brother, Gareth. But Blake and Zach's rooms, you know, were separated by like a hallway. But then they had these weird, it was an old house, these weird little doors that then had this weird like crawl through thing. And it was like, you know, secret rooms and stuff, but it would connect. And, you know, so that was a cool one. But when he disappeared, they lived in town, pretty close to like the downtown center. And just a cute, like older house as well. But it had a like an attached mother-in-law, which was really great because they had my grandparents or great-grandparents, his grandparents living with them. So it gave them like their independent living, but it was still connected to the main house. So they were still able to go over and help caretake and, you know, give them the independence, but also having family right there that, you know, can help them out. So they moved there and it worked out perfect.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
And it had a good garage that Zach could do all of his mechanic stuff. And,
oh, I bet.
Yeah, close to town, easy for his friends to come over. And yeah, it was awesome.
So just getting into a little bit how... So obviously you guys weren't living next to each other. So mm-hmm. how did you find out Zach went missing? Like what happened?
So I remember it really clear. I found out cause I was scrolling. I'd woken up in the morning. It was a nice day. My daughter was about to turn one. And I had saw Zach probably like 2 or 3 months before then. I came down, our grandma was in the hospital and stuff like that. And my daughter was a couple months old and Zach was really excited to meet her. He loves kids. And of course his was turning 6 at about the same time. And so I saw him just a couple months before. And so I'm waking up in the morning, you know, kind of doing that, decided to scroll through Facebook like everyone does in the morning. And I came across an article about it.
Oh, wow.
And it was, yeah. Zach and my aunt and uncle, they're very private people. They, privacy is a very big thing for them. So having to come out and even say anything, it's difficult. You know, they like to live a peaceful, relaxed lifestyle. So I saw the article about it and had found out that he was missing. I called his sister, my cousin Blake. And then that's, you know, when they told me what happened and what was going on. So it was heartbreaking. It felt like really surreal. Like there was no way it could be Zach, like of all people, there's no way, you know, it didn't make any sense.
I couldn't even imagine going through that, like a normal, I guess, normal circumstances, if you want to say, but to not even find out from family, like to have to be on something and then see that. And you're like, cause I'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, this is false. Like, why would somebody do something like this? Almost like it was a joke. So I couldn't even imagine how you felt finding out in that way.
It was definitely really tough. It was tough, but again, you know, it's one of those that I know that they're private. I knew that they were already working on stuff. They probably didn't want to worry anybody, you know, and then it also makes it a lot more real for them having to say stuff, like reaching out and saying, hey, so this happens. Like no one wanted to believe anything bad had happened to him. We all desperately wanted to think that they're just, I don't know, maybe he got lost or, you know, it was something that he was going to turn up real soon. And then you don't have to say anything. And then, you know, so that's just kind of what I think, you know, but it wasn't fun. And finding out in any way that someone you love and care about. You know, and, you know, he would text me all the time because him and his friends would come up to Seattle on his free nights to, you know, go out and you know, I had a fairly new baby and getting married, and, you know, he'd want me to go out with him. I'm like, I'm really sorry, but I'm really living a domesticated lifestyle right now.
I'm tired.
I'm tired. I got a new baby. It's exhausting. But you know, I mean, he reached every time he came to Seattle, he texted me or he called me, he said, what are you doing? Please come out. I miss you. Let's go have fun. So it was, it was just strange because he had probably had texted me maybe a week before, you know, we had talked about a week, 2 weeks before, cause he had come up to Seattle and it just was very surreal.
So I kind of just want to, fact check a little things that were in the episode. And then also, I know, you know, we had talked before, cause like I had said, this had been like months and months planning, you know, with stuff that happened in my life and other stuff. And so, I know you had said that in the original email, when you reached out, you said you had like more information and then you were going to talk to your aunt and uncle. And so I'm going through, you know, some of this stuff. And so I know, I mean, even the littlest, like minute details, like how, you know, I said he had a 5-year-old son. Well, you're saying his son was 6, you know, it just all the timeline, making sure the timeline is correct and everything like that. So he was selling that motorcycle that you had talked about on Craigslist, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So he had acquired, there was a listing for the motorcycle. So he bought it and he was going to fix it up. And then he fixed it up, posted it for sale. The guy that he bought the motorcycle from reached out to him and said, hey, I'd actually like to buy the motorcycle back. So said, okay, all right, you know, and so then they arranged for a time. You know, he tried to get some friends or somebody to go with him. You know, Zach was a smart guy. Like he knew, you know, safety measures, especially selling on Craigslist. And it doesn't matter that you're, you know, an almost 6-foot tall man, things can still go wrong, you know. So he tried to put those safety measures into place and you know, unfortunately no one was able to go with him. You know, he, and his big thing was that, you know, you're going from McMinnville to Coos Bay.
Oh, wow. That's
quite a distance.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know that's how far he went.
Yeah. So that was the plan. And so he's like, well, I can't go unless someone comes with me, obviously.
Yeah.
No one was able to go. The guy said, well, I, you know, I can drive you back. Said he had a business meeting in Seattle. I can drive you back. So he agreed and then he went.
So I don't mean to cut you off. I was picturing that in my head and I just wanted to give the listeners kind of an idea. Cause I mean, we're used to the Pacific Northwest, but so Salem, where I said I had lived before is about, I would say 35, 40 minutes east of McMinnville. And if he was going from McMinnville to Coos Bay, Coos Bay is like 3.5 hours southwest from McMinnville on the Oregon coast. So just so you guys can get like a picture, like, he wasn't just going, you know, in town or, you know, somewhere like Salem where it wouldn't take that long. Like this was a, this almost could have been like a day trip.
It was hours. It's a long distance. And, you know, to make a sale like that where, you know, the guy wants, you know, he wanted him to bring in the bike and, you know, said, you know, it's a whole thing. It's quite a distance. It's, you know, you have to have a plan in place. You can't, you know, and this is 2013 too. So you don't have, you know, the Uber and all the rideshare options either, but you're really reliant on someone that you know taking you, helping you out.
So he rode the bike down there and then the guy was supposed to bring him back?
Correct. And he left the title at his house, you know, as kind of like a collateral type thing, make sure he could get home. And so he did that. And, you know, unfortunately, he never made it home.
Wow.
So,
I'm just, now that you're putting stuff more into focus, you know, this is what everybody needs to hear because it's just, that's a really big trip and that's a really, it's just, that's crazy to know that he went so far. And then, you know, it's, so did he, I know there was some, there were a couple of speculation stuff in there. Did he ever send, there was something about a text. Did he ever send you guys a text or send his parents a text or?
He sent a couple text messages.
Okay.
He sent a couple text messages. I know one to a friend and I think either one to his mom or to his dad. The friend and my aunt and uncle said, that's not how he texts. That's not how he talks. That's not him. You know, and it made indications that, so one of his big dream that at the end of his life, was that he was going to be saving up by buying and selling all these different vehicles and motorcycles to then open up a shop in California.
Aww.
That's what he wanted to do. He had business partners.
That's awesome.
He had it all planned out. He was just a couple months away from making that goal.
Aww.
And then he was going to go and establish that the mechanic shop. So the text messages were saying, I went to California.
Wow.
You know, and different things like, you know, like that, or I'm safe. You know, I decided to go to California, which in itself is not normal for him because, again, he'd been a caretaker for his mom.
And he had a son.
For his grandma. His son was his whole world.
Yeah.
That's who he took care of. You know, his mom, you know, has been disabled for quite some time. So to just leave on a whim without any of this stuff and leaving his son behind.
That's unheard of.
That's not Zach.
Yeah.
That's not Zach. He would not have done that. And he didn't have anything with him. He wouldn't have just gone. I mean, I don't think there's an amount of money that this person or any person could give him that he would just up and leave on a whim.
Yeah. And I don't remember if it was his episode or it was another episode, but I said the same thing. I'm like, if anybody ever, like, the way that I text is so specific and I hate, like, most of the time I hate one word texts. So like, okay, I'll say it. But if I just do like K, like just the letter K, it was like, that never came from me.
Yeah.
And so I think it is important for people like that to know, you know, their friends, their family members, everybody has their own communication. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And so they did determine. So then the cops did determine that he did sell the bike back to that person, right?
Yeah, as far as we all know, it was sold.
Okay.
The transaction took place. The buyer had said that Zach had found other arrangements, another ride, and dropped him off at, I wish I remembered what the place was called. I have to double check. But he dropped him off at, you know, off one of these main roads.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, there's some surveillance.
There. Is that in Coos Bay?
It's kind of further. It's just outside of Coos Bay.
Okay.
Yeah. So not where there's a bunch of other businesses, not a lot of car houses and stuff like that. You know, fairly more on the remote side.
Okay.
But it was this business that was there. And I don't remember if it was like a lumber yard or if it was like some type of sale. It was something, though. It was a fairly big business. Mm-hmm. It had multiple people working.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be during business hours. So there was reports of sightings of him there and then nothing. There's nothing after that. There's no confirmation that he necessarily left.
Was there surveillance there, though, you said?
So some surveillance of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know fully how much. I know that nothing, his departure was not caught.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So he kind of just like showed up there and then he was confirmed there, but then it's like, we don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then, the guy or whoever that he sold the motorcycle to. So I had read that he was considered a person of interest. Can you say if he's still a person of interest or are they going another direction?
I can't really say.
Okay.
I did talk to my uncle, though, I think last week or the week before, and he had just talked to the lead detective a couple days prior.
Okay.
You know, the case is still active. It's open.
That's good.
You know, it's been, the anniversary was on the 23rd of this month. So it just passed, just been
it's
9 years.
9 years. Yeah.
9 years, and the case has not once been closed. It hasn't been cold. It's been
That's
open
good.
And active the entire time.
You don't hear that a lot. That's I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah. They're in really regular communication with my aunt and uncle. They check in often. You know, they've got, you know, a close relationship, especially after 9 years. You know, there's no way that there isn't that, you know, connection there. So they're in close contact. It's something that's active. You know, they're still working every possible lead.
Mm-hmm.
They're going into everything. You know, they feel really confident. My aunt and uncle feel very confident in the police department. They feel very confident that they've been doing their job, that they're, you know, they're doing absolutely everything they can. And part of, you know, the reason of not being able to say too much is because of the active and open. You know, they're not giving up. None of them are. They're working really hard on it. And, you know, they're hopeful that we're going to have a resolution, that we'll have some answers, you know, that one day, hopefully soon, you know, we'll know what happened or where he is, where we can find. You know, my aunt said, I'd be happy with a tooth. I don't care what it is. I just, I want a part of him, anything.
That's, that's the worst, is not knowing.
And it's her baby, you know, and I mean, any child, doesn't matter, but that's her baby.
So we only got a couple minutes here left. I just wanted to real quick go through again. So everybody knows, obviously you heard from his cousin, case is still open, active. They have some leads. I'm so happy to hear that, you know, they're doing something after 9 years and things are still, you know, progressing. Pray for your family. Hopefully you guys get the answers that you really, you know, deserve. And no matter what the outcome is, you guys have some sort of closure and get some sort of justice for Zach's disappearance. And then once again, I just wanted to remind everybody, Zach, he is 5'11". He's Native American. He's weighing between 150 and 170 with black hair and brown eyes. And then he did have that scar on his forehead, right? He had a scar on his forehead and like a scar on his lip, on his upper lip.
Or right. Also, you know, any tips or information, definitely call Coos County Sheriff's Office at 541-396-7800. And we also just want to mention that we now have federal FBI, DOJ, and then BIA, MMIP assistance.
Nice.
So, you know, we've got a ton of assistance. It's, you know.
No, that's good, because I actually had a different number for Coos County Sheriff's Office.
Okay.
So I'm glad that you said that number. One last question. Now that you said you have all of those, has he been entered into NamUs? Okay. And for those who don't know, NamUs is the national record system for missing unidentified persons. I've talked about it in a couple different cases, but that's good. That's just one more thing as well, because that's with all the DNA technology and everything upgrading. That's really good. That's really good. I'm so happy that you guys have so much, you know, support. You're still going and everyone's still, I really hope. I'm going to keep in touch. Definitely.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Just make sure that, you know, how you guys are doing, if there's been any progression. And hopefully, you know, it's not going to be a big episode like this, but hopefully in the future, you know, I can in the near future be like, hey, Zach's family got some closure. You know, they we're praying
fingers
for
crossed.
You. Yeah. Fingers crossed. We're praying for
you.
Thank you so much for doing this today. And I, like I said, I'll keep in touch. And if everybody can just keep Zach's name in your memory, you know, anybody who's down in the Oregon coast area, just keep an eye out, ear out. It's never too late to just talk about anything. Yeah. If anybody knows anything, if anybody saw anything, anybody hear anything, please come forward and help get this family the closure that they deserve.
Definitely. Thank you so much. Thank you for keeping Zach out there.
Thank you.